The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
This podcast is a member of the Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network. Visit voicesofwrestling.com to hear the rest of our great podcasts, as well as show reviews, columns, opinions, and updates across the world of wrestling.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to another edition of WrestleNomics Radio. I'm Brandon Thurston, broadcasting on demand, maybe live, from Buffalo, New York, where today is Sunday, 8:14 a.m., October 3rd, 2021. And today in the program, it is the end, it has been the end of Q3, the period ending on September 30th, beginning on July 1st. We have Q3 trends to talk about, all the latest in, of course, television viewership, but also ticket sales, or at least tickets distributed, Google web search, YouTube views, and maybe more. I don't have my tie buttoned, but we're going to talk about it all today. But first,
all right, and I am Chris Gullo here. Joining alongside Brandon Thurston to talk about the week of business in the world of professional wrestling. It's good to be back. I was absent last week. I was in Las Vegas. But you had a pretty pretty special guest, a much more prominent guest than myself hosting with you last week. So
yes, we had Mookie on. If you haven't listened to that already, it's in the archives. And it is on YouTube, too. I had Chris Harrington, the originator of WrestleNomics, come over on last week Sunday as he was in the area in Rochester because AEW was in Rochester last week. So we had a talk on my couch and we streamed it for all to see and hear. And eventually someday, hopefully we will do a WrestleNomics conference. Sort of like there's the Code Conference happening this past week. I'm sure everyone listening knows what that is, but it's a sort of a tech media conference. But no, it was a good talk. I saw the aggregators picked up his comments on diversity. Uncharted territory is bleeding through my shirt right now. Can you see it?
Not really.
Okay.
At least not from my angle.
The aggregators picked up his comments on diversity, because I know that's been, at least on Twitter, that's been a thing that I see people talking about quite a bit when it comes to AEW and WWE. It was a good talk. I still don't know to what extent, and I don't know if we're going to know for a couple of years, to what extent WWE and AEW are going to affect each other in terms of TV rights, but that's the big talking point to me. We got the WWE stock open here for some reason, but yeah, we are recording. We have some new assets here, as they're called in the streaming world. I've heard all these things that are on the screen right now. I'm doing it. This is a live stream that is available publicly, but it's 8:17 a.m. Eastern time right now. So I think we're the only ones, in the wrestling world who are awake right now. As Chris Gullo forced me to wake up this early in order to record a podcast ahead of let's hide it here. Oh, ahead of his trip to WrestleNomics Stadium later today, where the Buffalo Bills take on, I don't even know who are the Buffalo Bills playing today?
Houston Texans.
The Houston Texans. It takes a long time to get into the stadium though because of the vaccine requirement. Is that the case?
Yeah, so they recommend people get there by noon at the latest because they say they're understaffed and also checking vaccination requirements. Last week I was in Las Vegas. I attended a football game at the only other stadium in the NFL right now requiring vaccinations. and that's Allegiant Stadium, Las Vegas. Much more efficient. Now, it's a little bit of a different environment where there's not 50, 60,000 people tailgating, trying to get as many drinks in them before they walk into
the
stadium.
That doesn't happen in Las Vegas like it is in Buffalo? There aren't people throwing themselves through flaming tables?
No, there's not a lot of room to tailgate. It's weird where we parked was in like some like business complex. There's not a lot of parking there as far as actually like connected to the stadium. So not a lot of big tailgating and all that. So you don't really have to deal with, you know, everyone just trying to rush into once. But even with that, it was very efficient. They were very thorough on checking the vaccination requirements, as well as, you know, ticketing in the gate. I got in and out in less than 10 or in the stadium in less than 10 minutes with both checkpoints, where it takes a good 30 minutes around that for the Bills stadium.
What did they have you? What are the things that you can show to show that you are vaccinated?
The Clear app is what they recommend.
And is that a nationwide thing?
Yeah. So it's a lot of arenas are using it. So what I had to do was I had to scan my ID, scan my vaccination card, fill out some information about my vaccination, and then take a picture. So then it like anytime now I go to that stadium, I could just use that and it shows like my face and a barcode that they can scan. So
wow,
they were doing vaccinations on site though. So like, cause they were allowing like if you had one shot, but they did have a vaccination on site. Like people, if they wanted to go to stadium, can go get a vaccination
and then go in because you've had your one shot.
Yes.
Wow. Even though it takes like 2 weeks for it to really protect you or something, right?
They still you have to wear your mask, you know, and all that. But
if you get the shot right here, right now, you can go in the stadium.
Yes.
Okay. Well, I'm glad people are getting vaccinated. So,
yeah, it's, any way you can do it, right?
I guess.
But yeah, it's good to be back. Thank you, Brandon, for getting up this early and doing this.
It's fine.
I got my coffee.
It's fine.
You got your coffee.
It's fine. I will just harangue you about it. Are you seeing the stream right now? You have a lower third. I have a lower third. There are animations going across our names here right now with our various social media platforms. Are you seeing that?
Yes.
Are you appreciating that? Is that amazing?
That is pretty cool. I really like this high tech advancements we've gotten here.
There's a clock, so everyone knows that it's 8:21 a.m. There's a ticker.
That's what I was going to say. I love the ticker.
There's a ticker that's just rolling the latest TV ratings across it. I'll be using this for the Thursday live TV ratings talks as well. Since we talked last, I have... are you familiar with this video where I've expressed my concern about whether AEW... Sure, people say it's good, but is it getting too good? You're familiar with this?
I'm very familiar.
Why are you... What do you mean you're very familiar?
I've had some comments come on when I've shared that content on the WrestleNomics Facebook through groups.
Yeah, like how many comments though? Like one?
Yeah, it was like one. I think it was like a second one in like a group, but it wasn't as brash as the guy that told you have no idea what you're talking about.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's nothing compared to what happened on Twitter. It's fascinating the reactions we had. We had people who got it, people who got it and thought it was funny or whatever. We had people who got it and were mad about it, and you know, you're biased. That was a pretty small portion of the response, that one. But what we did have was lots of people, at least in terms of people who felt the need to comment on it, who did not get it, thought it was in earnest. Just a variety of people mad and quote tweeting it, and I think that sort of fed the interest in that video that you can scroll back and find on Twitter, or it's on YouTube too. But yeah, I learned a lot about wrestling fans, I think, in the course of that process. But anyway, I don't know. I guess you want to talk about TV ratings. Anything else going on?
No, we can kind of get right into it here, and starting with the Gullo report, and we'll talk about last week's this past Friday, but yeah, last week's SmackDown. The projection that you have based on the preliminary info is 2.2 million for SmackDown, with a 0.6 in the 18 to 49. You compare that to the week before with 2.14 and 0.55. So, looks like a stronger 18 to 49 and stronger overall bounce back for SmackDown. Maybe the draft caused some interest to go bump up a little bit there. But yeah, a little bit of an uptick for SmackDown. As
I haven't looked lately, but I haven't looked since this came out yesterday morning. This is a prelim, I guess. Maybe I'll look into this more Monday when the final rating comes out. In terms of, like, is this a disappointing number for a draft? I guess. You would think there'd be a bump, and it was a pretty flat rating. It's probably going to be up a little bit from last week, but not hugely so. And they've done some bigger ratings recently. So maybe not a ton of interest in the draft. Have you seen Sean Ross Sapp has a fast national, we should call it, for Rampage? Have you seen that? It's not on our board right now.
I have not seen that yet. No,
I will read it to you. It is he has so a fast national to explain what's happening here. So we get prelims, which we just discussed for SmackDown, because SmackDown is a broadcast program on a broadcast network called Fox. Everything else that we talk about here, though, is on cable. Cable doesn't have fast affiliates. These prelim numbers, also known as fast affiliates, that's only for ABC, NBC, CBS, Fox, CW, right? Cable, this doesn't exist unless a network or somebody who's got a relationship with Nielsen decides to pay multiple thousands of dollars to get the fast national rating for a cable program. It's a request that you make to Nielsen. You pay for it, and Nielsen will collect this information early for you. It might change in the final rating, but they're giving you an early bit of information here. I think like this is definitely happening with the Super Bowl, because the Super Bowl is on Sunday, and then the Sunday ratings probably don't come out. The finals probably don't come out until Tuesday, but everybody wants to know the Super Bowl, because that's going to be the most watched telecast on all TV that year. But anyway, so somebody made this request in the TV world, and Sean Ross Sapp is reporting it. And we have, according to him, where is the number here? 594,000 total viewership, 316 in the demo, which would be a 0.24 demo rating. This would be the lowest Rampage of the, I think, 8 episodes that they've done so far. Not a huge margin, but this would be the lowest, both in terms of total viewership. I don't think they've done one under 600,000 viewers yet. And this would be two demo ratings points below the low up to this point, which I believe is 0.27 a couple weeks ago. So Rampage, I forgot that there was wrestling on Friday. But yeah, Rampage appears to have done the lowest of its short run here, for what it's worth. So there's that. We'll find out for sure on Monday if anything changes as well for SmackDown.
That rating, too, that's very similar to the Friday Night Dynamites they were doing when they had to move.
Yes, that's a good point. That sounds right. I've got the numbers here somewhere. We could really test the stream here, and if I pull these up in the is this our first stream from the WrestleOnk supercomputer? Did we do one before? I can't remember.
I think it's the first one, yeah, because the last show I was on, you discussed that it was working now, so the supercomputer was fixed.
But I hadn't made it run yet.
Yeah, but you haven't made it run.
It's running, and it's pretty good. I'm so spoiled now that I'm thinking about getting a laptop now, too. That would be better. That's what I usually use, is a laptop. So if we look at, I have a thing called Friday Query here, which we're not showing on the screen right now, but I'll just tell you what it says. So the Friday Dynamites did, let's see here, average, the first one did 526. This is total viewership. No, this is demo. No, this is total viewership. What am I looking at?
Yeah, yes. Total viewership. Yeah,
yeah. Yeah. This is May 28th, 526. The next one did 462, 487. So they had two that were under 500,000. The fourth one did 559. Those are the four Friday dynamites. There was another one on Saturday that did much better at 8 o'clock. But, and what did I just say the number was? 594. So this would be still better than any of those. Because the best Friday dynamite was 559. How about key demo? In the demo, the Friday dynamites did 263, 247, 244, 262. And again, this one doing, 316. So that's substantially higher in the demo than any of the Friday dynamites.
This did too have Daniel Bryan on the show in a match
with Nick Jackson. Yeah, yeah.
That, Bryan Danielson. I gotta get used to that again. Bryan Danielson.
And they opened, and I believe Jack Evans and Orange Cassidy closed. So what we've been seeing a lot in the quarter hours is this late it opens strong and always declines. So I expect the same thing happened here, especially when you got the difference between Bryan Danielson in the open and. And Jack Evans and Orange Cassidy at the end. Bryan Danielson was wrestling Nick Jackson. I wonder if that's the best strategy. They've been putting on some, you know, something strong in the beginning and a main event, but with, you know, stars who are not as prominent as those who have opened at times. I think CM Punk is his match with Will Hobbs. That was a 2-hour episode last week, but he was on the, I think they had him open. I wonder if that's the right strategy or if you end up getting better average viewership by putting the bigger match on later. I don't know.
I just think it's the time of the night. I think they're going the old,
that's definitely the biggest factor. Yeah. I just wonder what gets you the better average viewership in the end. I think it's worth experimenting with, but yeah.
All right. As far as going back to SmackDown, this week coming up, they're starting the King of the Ring and the, it's not the Queen of the Ring. It's like called something, the Queen's Crown, I think, tournaments, which will, I assume the finals might be a crown jewel. It's called the Queen's Crown. Yeah, we have that coming up. So another kind of a, for lack of word, but any better words, a gimmicky thing for SmackDown to see if they can kind of upticked to back where they were a few weeks back. So
is the King of the Ring going to be happening at the large scale international event?
Well, they haven't officially announced if they are going to have those matches on there, but I would assume, especially calling the Queen one, like the Queen's Crown, I believe it's called. I'm like 95% sure on that. I might be wrong, but
I'm looking forward to the large scale international event featuring Roman Reigns and Brock Lesnar with his first match back. Okay.
All right. You know, we discussed this week's Rampage, but last week's Rampage on Friday, December 24th, the final rating was 640,000. The P2 Plus with a 0.29 and 1849. Very, very, very comparable numbers to September 17th, which did 642,000 and 0.28. And that was the 2-hour version of Rampage from the Arthur Ashe Stadium.
So this was in 2 hours. Very close to what last week did from 10 to 11. This one, of course, going from 10 to midnight. I guess, how do you feel about this number? The first hour ranked number one. The second hour ranked number four on the night. This is among cable originals. If you average the 2 hours together, it's still the most watched cable original on the day. I know there are Twitter reactions talking about how, well, if I had CM Punk and Bryan Danielson, they should be doing X. I guess this is not on the higher end of expectations. Sure. This is the Grand Slam episode from Arthur Ashe Stadium. We figure maybe it would do a better rating. And I think a lot of people are looking back at that Punk rating, which was 1.1 million viewers or something like that on the second episode of Rampage, which was one of the biggest, moments in wrestling history, and comparing that to this, which is, you know, almost cut in half. but I think they're, I think this is okay. This is fine. This is not super impressive, relative to what they've been doing lately. But, at 10, ranking number one on the day is pretty good.
Yeah. So people got to remember too, like, you know, in context, like, oh, it's not doing as well as Dynamite and all that. People have to remember in context. This type of rating on a Friday night on a cable network, TNT's probably ecstatic. Sure, they would love more than this, but I'm sure this is not nowhere near a disappointment, I imagine. Mm-hmm. Because who else, I mean, who's tuning in to a cable network Friday nights? It's not live sports, like in a large scale. Not a lot.
Yeah. But the real comparison that you should always make, though, is compare SmackDown to Rampage, okay?
Yes.
SmackDown did, let me look at this difference. Did like three times, more than that, almost four times.
Yeah, you mean the broadcast network program that gets tons of advertising on the large?
That's just excuses. That's just
NFL.
Excuses. Okay. WWE has a larger reach platform. That's just where they are as a media company at this point. And you know, if a AEW wants to be a wrestling company, that's fine. And you know, but WWE's competition is everybody, and I don't know if they won on Friday, last week or this week, but they've been doing well. I think they even beat Big Brother a couple weeks ago too, but yeah.
All right. We're going to move over to Raw from September 27th with a 1.71 and the P2+ with a 0.48 in the 18 to 49. Compared to September 20th, similar numbers, 1.79 P2 with a 0.49 in the 18 to 49, rating there. So, Raw kind of staying where it is. And this is with, like, you know, I believe we had Big E versus Lashley in a steel cage, if I'm correct about that.
Yes. We did. I broke this down on Thursday. This is the second week in a row where they did a big advertised match to open the show. Schmoz finish. Advertised a bigger match later. The week before it was the three-way between Roman Reigns, Big E, and Lashley. This week, regular match. Schmoz finish. Steel cage match. Big E, Lashley. This didn't result in the program holding up much better than it has been normally. Take that for what it's worth. I mean, but Raw is doing better than it could be doing against Monday Night Football here. So Raw beat Dynamite, which we'll talk about in a moment, did beat Dynamite in the demo for the second week in a row after the 2 weeks before those 2 weeks, ending with Dynamite being up.
And they will have the second part of the draft this Monday. So we'll see if that does anything for them.
Right. Very true.
Moving on to NXT,
excuse me, NXT 2.0, you meant to say.
Yes, NXT 2.0, sorry. Yeah,
we've got to tell our production team to update this, this program cell here where it says WNXT, it's got to say NXT 2.0.
On Tuesday, September 28th, did 655,000, 0.14 in 18 to 49, that is down. From the week before on the 21st with 750,000 and a 0.20 in the 18 to 49. So I think the interest in, ooh, what is this new NXT is slowly fading out.
Yeah, they did two strong weeks. I was really impressed with the second week, how much it held up. But this week it was now back down into a normal range under 700,000 in terms of total viewership. And if you look at that demo number, 0.14, compare that to Rampage, which last week did less viewers total than NXT, but did more than double in the demo. So there's that. I heard some discussion earlier this week about sort of what the future of NXT is. They have a multi-year deal that was renewed in March. That has just begun, in fact. Has just gone into effect with that. So, and I wonder if, now that I'm thinking about this, I never thought about this way. I wonder if term one just came to an end, which was a 2-year deal. And whenever I go through all the data, I always have to go back and be like, you know, when I'm looking back at like when Dynamite started, and I have to be like, oh yeah, that's, well, NXT had these 2 weeks in September 2019 where they had 1-hour episodes that were unopposed, yada, yada. I wonder if the deal starts there and ends 2 years later in the middle of September. And for some reason there was, the timing of that is the reason why they did NXT 2.0 when they did, if that coincides with the beginning of the second term or second deal that we're now under for NXT and for WWE and NBC Universal for NXT. Just to totally talk about NXT for a minute and what their whole situation is. I don't think WWE is getting that much revenue for this, for NXT being on the USA Network. I think they were originally taken off the network to go on linear TV for the notion that, you know, Triple H had this overperforming developmental brand that was doing really well and maybe you could grow its popularity. And oh yeah, by the way, we don't want to compete with AEW, though that's not, it doesn't have anything to do with it. God, no. But they wanted to, I think they wanted to compete with AEW too. And that reason combined with the opportunity to maybe grow a third brand that would generate major media rights fees like Raw and SmackDown have. I think that was the play. And NXT did not win the Wednesday Night War. They got handily beaten. Most weeks in total viewership, I think every week except for one in the demo. And out of the 70 some odd weeks, I think that they were running head to head, and it didn't work out. There doesn't appear to be a huge media rights value opportunity here related to the NXT brand. So now the play, at least now, is to you know, sort of hand wave Triple H's vision of doing cool wrestling, and to really make it a developmental brand that serves Vince McMahon's wants in talent. We've been through a few years at least now. I mean, really the entire history of NXT, since it's been on the network, of wrestlers coming up to the main roster brand and kind of being squandered or Vince apparently not getting it or whatever, and things not going that well. And wrestlers who are brought up in an environment where, you know, there were people excited about this talent and they were doing, you know, a different flavor of wrestling. And even Triple H's own words, you know, it's like chocolate and vanilla. Or I think he made the analogy on one media call. You know, it's like rock and roll, or it's like alternative rock, and they're like pop music. You know, NXT is like alternative rock. You know, we're what's his favorite band with Lemmy? Motorhead.
Motorhead, yep.
Yes. And WWE is Maroon 5.
An interesting observation I have too is, so they just relaunched this NXT brand a couple weeks ago, and you would think, okay, so these are going to be the main players. This is who we're going to build on. We're interested in this. And they're already including NXT people in the draft. And initially when I heard that, I thought, oh, it would be kind of the people we really haven't seen, or maybe like, so, you know, people have kind of maybe lost titles recently or whatever. Hit Row. Got drafted to SmackDown. Yeah. Who I thought they were going to be a very focal piece of NXT 2.0. Looked like that's what it was leaning towards, and they're going to SmackDown. So it'll be interesting to see what happens on Monday. Like, threw me through for a loop.
Yeah, I don't know. I've never really surprised by the things that happen in Vince McMahon's company and his product. But the notion, what is the goal now? Obviously, it's developmental. I guess as far as a media property, what is the goal? Is NXT in a few years from now, let's say 3 years from now, let's say this is a 2-year deal, who knows? But let's say 3 years from now, when, if this is a 2-year deal, then the 2-year deal will be expired. Is NXT still on the USA Network? What's the viewership like? I don't know. When you're the USA Network, you could, I guess, put, that what was in the slot before was Law and Order SVU reruns or something, which don't cost you really anything because you probably own that intellectual property. I don't know if there's royalties that you have to pay out associated with that, or what all the costs are, but it's not an original program that you have to produce. And it's probably quite profitable. Now it's probably got a pretty low demo rating. I don't know if it's got a better demo rating than this, which is a 0.14, but Yeah, I mean, I could see NXT being back on the network in a couple years, but I don't have a strong feeling that NXT is going to be canceled by NBC Universal / USA Network. I think it helps there, even if this is sort of a break even for them, for the USA Network in terms of what revenue they're able to get out of NXT. Even if they're not making money here, it's still deepening their partnership with WWE, which is important to them for Raw, which is by far their number one program on the USA Network. It's important for them with Peacock, which they need to grow for the future, and WWE is a significant part of what's keeping people using Peacock. There's probably at least a million people who were used to watching WWE stuff on the WWE Network and now have got to go to Peacock to do that. So there's that. I don't know. It may be just linear TV's need for live content, as we've seen the explosion of the number of wrestling programs that are on television. We got MLW coming to Vice this coming week, which I don't have in the notes here, but that's, we'll talk about that rating when it happens, probably on this program next week. Hopefully we have a Thursday rating. We didn't get a Thursday rating because Nielsen's delayed for no reason, no holiday. But anyway, I digress. Maybe the bar has been lowered for how high you have to jump to get over to get onto linear TV, and linear TV needs live programming. I don't know if I know NXT's been taped, but it needs programming that people want to watch now more than ever to keep the bundle together and to help salvage some strategies that get revenue and time spent onto their SVOD/AVOD platform in the case of Peacock. So I remain somewhat optimistic, although wouldn't be shocked if NXT is no longer on the USA Network a couple years from now, I guess. But I remain optimistic that's going to continue to be the case, even though NXT is not this more ambitious brand in itself, in terms of getting itself over. Its priorities seemingly have changed to serve the main roster proclivities.
So we're going to move on to Dynamite, which was live from very close in our neck of the woods from Rochester on Wednesday, September 29th, 1.15.
Did you go?
Million.
You didn't go, did you?
I did go, yes.
You did go?
Yes, I did. With a 0.45 in 1849, if you compare that to the week before with a 1.27 with a 0.48, and that was the Arthur Ashe episode.
So, I didn't know you went. Yeah. We should have had you live on location outside of Blue Cross Arena with a WrestleOnyx microphone reporting live. Our correspondent, Chris Gull, on the site, on the scene.
Not a great arena experience.
Really? Because of the arena? Or because of AEW?
Not AEW. It was the arena. And it may be a pre pandemic thought of me is gone, and now I'm thinking inside the pandemic, but I feel like the hallways were very small. The concession lands, the way they were laid out, you can't stand, a good distance from somebody. I got to a concessions line, and being a vegan, really, usually the only things I can eat in a stadium are French fries and pretzels.
Yes.
But by the way, side note, in Allegiant Stadium, Brandon, vegan pizza, vegan cheesecakes, multiple. Oh yeah. Wow. But anyways, back to Blue Cross. So I finally got in line for something, got there, and they're like, oh, sorry, we're out of French fries. But the most interesting experience that blew my mind was in a post COVID world, we have multiple concessions that are only taking cash.
Really? Well, it is Rochester.
That blew my mind.
I mean, this is not what's the biggest franchise that runs in Blue Cross? Am I saying that right?
Rochester Americans.
Minor league hockey AHL. Team, right?
Yeah.
This is not an NHL arena or NBA arena. For whatever that's worth, I guess that has something to do with it. What was the live experience like other than that?
I thought it was very good.
Vaccination requirement, right?
Yes. I believe so. Yeah. I mean, I showed it. I'm just so used to it now, whether it's required or not. Like I went, it was funny. I went to show mine at T-Mobile Arena for the UFC and they weren't even checking it. So
like, they weren't checking for vaccines at the UFC show.
It wasn't required at T-Mobile.
At Dana White's event, there was no vaccine requirement.
Believe it or not. Isn't that crazy? But overall, production was good. That like I can nitpick some things. Like when you're in this actual arena, the mic that they have to really hear the sound of the mat for the bumps was kind of deafeningly loud.
Really?
But that may be an acoustics thing. I was talking to a couple of my friends from Rochester, and they said the acoustics in that arena are terrible. Okay. So it wasn't an AEW production thing at all.
Okay. We do have 8 concurrent viewers right now on YouTube, I will tell you. And we do have one viewer, one commenter saying, I'm just home from working overnight. What are you two doing up at this unholy hour? Yes. But an okay live experience other than that.
Yeah.
Okay. Then you turn the mic down under the ring.
Yeah, I only stayed for Dynamite.
You left. You left. You didn't stay for Rampage?
I did not.
Why not? Because you had a long drive home.
Hanging out with some friends.
You weren't entertained enough. You're sort of you're more of a pro WWE person in this culture war versus pro AEW.
No.
Okay.
Just squeezing in a lot of things in a short time.
Were there a lot of people there? I watched the Dynamite show and I was looking in the crowd and I was like, every 10 seconds or so, I was like, do I recognize that person? Is that somebody I know? I definitely saw, Mookie was on the screen at one point, chanting for Brody. There's another point where Sweet Lou and other, Rochester, early days Rochester indie wrestlers were freaking out during the Jungle Boy and Adam Cole match. But yeah,
the tributes to Brody were great. And I don't know if you knew this, so this past weekend was the 2CW reunion shows.
Yes, I'm aware.
I attended Friday night's one in Syracuse since I was already in town. The negative one spot was very cool. That they did at the end.
I heard about that. So you stayed in Rochester Wednesday night. Is that what happened?
No. So I went home Wednesday night. I went to Syracuse on Friday because I had an event there on Saturday. Okay. But the promotion I work for, it's a kickboxing promotion, Lace Up Promotions. They wanted me to do the weigh-ins on Friday night at like a local sports bar, which would only take
just
like half an hour.
Real quick, you went from Buffalo to Rochester. You went back to Buffalo. You drove again past Rochester, and then you were in Syracuse.
Yes. Mind you, and I was in Las Vegas until late Monday night as well. I'm tired, Brad.
I could not do this. This is why I have to stay in Buffalo all the time and do stuff on my computer. Yeah.
I'm staying local all week. My only show this week is in Buffalo. I have 2 shows, a comedy one too, but they're both in Buffalo. So, But all right, we will see. So yeah, so just Dynamite, a little bit of a drop. I mean, I think that was expected, but still, here's a question for you: do you see them falling under a million, not including like holidays, the rest of the year?
I don't
know. How long can they ride this momentum?
All I can think about is what my Twitter replies will be like if they go under a million. and the pronouncements of AEW's demise and soon death. They could. I mean, it depends on the content and the momentum of the content, but it doesn't look like they're going to go under a million anytime soon. We've seen that the range of this show is a couple hundred thousand. And it's been since... where I think we're 6 weeks into the Punk era, the CM Punk era of AEW. And, since CM Punk debuted, AEW has been number one on cable in the demo on its day every week of those 6 weeks. And it's been over a million viewers every week. I mean, I wouldn't be shocked if it did 900,000 one of these weeks, but it seems to be doing fine. And increasingly, you know, it's really close to Raw every week. This week in the breakdown of the demos, Dynamite did not beat Raw in the demo, as we can see on the screen right now. Raw did a 0.48. Dynamite did a 0.45. With men 18 to 49, though, Dynamite did beat Raw. I know they're on different nights, and Raw is going against Monday Night Football. I know, but that's the measurement of the viewership, for whatever it's worth, whatever you want to take out of it. But so there's that, and it's you know, evident that the difference in the demo is women in the demo for these two programs. Dynamite's 70-30 men, and Raw is more like 60-40. Is that something that Dynamite can change? I don't know. Will they change it? I don't know. But it's an advantage. I mean, I think it's an advantage that WWE has. For whatever reason, they have a larger, by proportion, they have a larger audience of women and of people of color. So, and that's one of the things, that I talked to Mookie about last week. But, maybe a show that will draw women into AEW, maybe not, is this one that we'll talk about.
Yeah, what followed AEW Dynamite on TNT was Roads to the Top, from Wednesday, September 29th, 422,000 with a 0.17 and an 18 to 49 on its debut episode.
Higher demo number. I know people love this. Higher demo number than the NXT, but way under in viewership, 422. It's going to be down from here. That's one takeaway I can say with some confidence. That's going to be down next week. But I don't know. I don't know what context to put this in. It ranks, I think, number 16 on the night in the demo.
Do we compare this probably mostly to Miz and Maryse, because they had a lead in from a program with the company they were associated with?
Right.
I feel like that would be the most best comparison. I mean, you could say Total Divas, but Total Divas usually lived on an island of its own as far as,
right, it didn't have a lead in from in-ring programming. Yeah. So on Twitter the other day, I did do a breakdown, I wonder if I can just like paste this in here and it'll go right over the slide and we can actually look at it. So if I paste this, right click, paste, you see that now? There it is. So if people are watching, you can see this. In terms of what did this convert, assuming broadly here that the entire audience of this reality show was the audience that came before it. But I mean, I'm sure it's a large factor. It's not everybody, right? But it's a large factor. So anyway, the question is, what was Miz and Mrs. as a percentage of Raw's viewership? What was Rose to the Top as a percentage of Dynamite's viewership? And, it's very similar, so far. We got one data point to look at here, but yeah, 37%. So that's 422 divided by 1152, right? 422,000 divided by 1.1582 million. That's on par with what Miz and Mrs. was doing when it was the show following Raw. In 1849, the conversion for Miz and Mrs. was a little higher, than Roads to the Top, which did 39% conversion in terms of 227,000 viewers in the demo. Dynamite did 588. There are some differences here, right? Miz and Maryse. You got me saying Miz and Maryse. It's Miz and Mrs.
Yeah, that's my fault. It's Miz and Mrs. I just, cause that's their names and it's very close to the show.
So Miz and Mrs. is a 30-minute show. I think they've done some like 1-hour specials. A 30-minute show that would start at 11 in the cases that we're looking at here. This is a 60-minute show that started at 10 o'clock. So in those ways, it is different. I don't know if that has a huge bearing on what we're looking at here in terms of the conversion rate, but yeah. This is comparable, and we have one data point, and we'll see how it goes in the following weeks. I have no idea how many episodes this is supposed to be. I would imagine something like 11, something like that. But yeah, and this is where it's going to be, I understand, this time slot following Dynamite for whatever this first season is.
All right, moving on to Thursday night, which we don't have an updated rating. You said due to Nielsen's, maybe we'll get that Monday.
Yes, we should get it Monday.
But if you look at September 23rd, it's at 117,000.03. So we'll see if it dropped much from that. Christopher Daniels is now on the program. We'll see how long that is. But definitely the relationship between AEW continues just with different talent.
That means we also don't have a rating for the FMW episode of Dark Side.
Yes. Did you watch?
No, did you?
Yes, and I could say as a ring announcer, promoters out there, please do not give me your company. And if it has ties to the Yakuza.
did the ring announcer...
Arai. Yeah. Arai took it over from Onita and...
That sounds familiar.
Ended up losing a lot of money and owing the Yakuza money, and yeah, it was bad.
And he died... committed suicide, right?
Yes. And that did not stop, you know, according to the episode, that did not stop the Yakuza. They took his family, they kicked his family out of their house and took over his house and all his assets and everything.
Yeah, I think there could be, I think this is a very untold story, at least here on the English-speaking side of the view of Japanese wrestling, about really the deeper relationships about with to what extent is the Yakuza involved in pro wrestling? Has it been involved? Obviously, but we widely believe that it has been to a great degree. I just don't know the details of this. Obviously, there's a story about Ricky Dozan's murder and so forth, his stabbing and all that. That's, you know, which was,
this is,
by all accounts, he was stabbed by a person involved with the Yakuza anyway.
This has been the most upfront I've seen, at least on this side of, yeah, it's the Yakuza's involved. Usually it's, oh, Japanese local businessmen and
this, sponsors. Like, usually
they skate around it, right? Like
sponsors.
Sponsors. But this was like, nope, the Japanese mafia. Like, all right. And there was no heels this week. They'll be back.
Correct. Yes.
With two episodes left.
I have no idea. I haven't looked into it. Do you know why there was no episode this week?
I don't know. When I went on Wikipedia, it had skipped as far as the episode list. So I don't know if there was something special on Stars or what it was. But
yeah. Okay.
But all right. Yes. So we'll move out of the Gullah Report into some news we got this week with WWE, that they're going to host the Royal Rumble in St. Louis. We got this note this past week on September 27th, but it's going to be January 29th, 2022, which would be the largest venue to host the Royal Rumble. It's about a 70,000-seat arena, used to host the St. Louis Rams of the NFL. They moved to Los Angeles. Right now really just does, I think, sometimes college basketball, rodeos and stuff like that. But it's not as widely used as it was once was when it was an NFL team.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, this is a good idea to run these major shows in stadium-sized venues. It's something that WWE could have been doing much earlier. I don't know why they didn't. But this is not the first time that the Rumble's been in a stadium. They did the Alamo Dome, right, in San Antonio in a recent year?
Yeah, and they've done the baseball stadiums.
Yes, they did a baseball stadium the 1 year recently also, which, where was that? Do you remember?
So I always get the two confused. So I think that was in Phoenix, because I know Minute Maid in Houston, that was, what was that? Because they had one too, right? I'm pretty sure, I could be wrong, but I know we've had at least two of the big four at baseball stadiums, but I believe in Phoenix they had the Rumble, was I think the year Becky Lynch won.
Okay. So yeah, this will help them with their live event revenue. And I think you might not be able to charge a higher average ticket price, but you do bigger volume. So yeah.
All right. Moving on, to a very similar topic, tickets distributed, and we got some averages As far as, you know, since tickets have been back with live events for July.
Yeah. So I just threw this together this morning as soon as I woke up minutes ago. This is from WrestleTix. I basically just did a pivot table on the WrestleTix data. So I don't know if there's any events missing here, but this gives us an idea. This is, since I rambled in the beginning about how we're going to talk about Q3. So this is, I'm stopping at September 30th here. So this is attempting to understand what the WWE, for one, would report in their Q3 report, which will be probably be at the end of this month. Heads up. Halloween time is not just spooky time. It is time to, do wrestle,
spooky season,
do WWE Q3. So we're getting something in the range, at least in this count. And again, I got to go through it with a comb to see if there's any events missing or what, or just, you know, some events that he couldn't get the map for. But anyway, we've got, 370,000 tickets distributed. Most of those are probably, I mean, probably 90% of those are paid. So if we, but just a rough, quick math here, if we assume that the average ticket is somewhere between $55 and $70, it's usually, I think, even lower than that, but I think it's a little bit on the higher end here, at least with the pent up demand, early on here. And we heard about how high ticket prices were for the Madison Square Garden SmackDown. So I would think somewhere between 20 and maybe $26 million in live event revenue. Again, well, I'll go through this and do a real estimate closer to Q3 time. I think they usually announce this 3 weeks out. So I would expect, if not this week, if not this Thursday, the following Thursday, for them to tell us when the Q3 report will be. But I expect it to be at the end of the month. But yeah, $20 to $26 million in revenue, somewhere in that range. Probably compare that to Dynamite. I'm assuming a slightly lower ticket price of more along lines of somewhere between $50 and $65 per sold ticket. And that ends up with somewhere between $6.3 and $8.2 million in live event revenue. So that's what? That's about a third, right? Because 8 times 3 is 24. So Dynamite, AEW doing about a third of WWE's live event revenue. Obviously, that's largely driven by volume. But in terms of average viewership, I did the median here, actually. We've got Dynamite in terms of tickets distributed. So this is not sold, but in terms of tickets distributed by WrestleTix estimates of the ticket maps, Dynamite did a median of 5,700 for Dynamite. Compare that to Raw. Raw doing well above that, nearly 8,000, again, to Dynamite's 5,700, and SmackDown even higher, even though we've seen some SmackDowns that have been waning. But in Q3, SmackDown, 8,800. And pay-per-views, I think there's been three. I did the median here, so this would be skewed if we did an average, because SummerSlam was like 40,000. But about 10,000 for pay-per-views, which is right on par with AEW's one pay-per-view of All In, which did over 10,000. So Dynamite's still well below in Q3. If we took the whole bucket of Q3, Dynamite's still well below Raw or SmackDown, comparable in its one pay-per-view, well below in volume, because obviously, you know, WWE has to their credit, has really grown its second brand, and has two big TV shows that are their flagship TV shows that can draw in crowds just under 10,000 a lot of times, not all the time. The W live events had a median tickets distributed of 6,000, which we're separating out from the W super show house shows. This would include some international too, I think, the W live stuff. But anyway, the super show house shows, 6,300. So even that number on a median basis, 6,300 higher than the median for Dynamite of 5,700.
All right. So we're going to move on, as it's a new month, which means we got Google Trends.
Yes, I ran the Python script this morning, scrambling to put together some slides here. So I am confident in this one.
You were very productive this morning.
It's amazing what you can get done quickly with a Python script and an internet connection. so September, slightly up for AEW from August. August was this huge month of web search volume for AEW because of the addition of Punk and I think swirling rumors and speculation about Bryan Danielson and maybe Adam Cole and maybe others. But yes. So we've got in September, W810. This is a, what is this unit of measurement we're talking about here? It is a, if you're not familiar with Google Trends, this is a relative measurement. So what I'm doing here is I'm taking the last, I think it's 9 months or 8 months. I think it's 8 months. And we take the peak of all the things that I'm measuring here. I'm measuring 15 different wrestling companies. W and AEW are by far at the top. WWE is by far at the top on its own. And basically, the peak for the last 8 months is WWE in February. We standardize that at 1,000. And then everything else is held to that standard. Google Trends, unfortunately, does not give us absolute values, does not give us the absolute number of queries or searches. But anyway, so in September, WWE's relative value of search volume, this is worldwide, 810 to AEW's 258. So that's like a AEW doing a third, roughly a third, I think that is, of WWE, which is a closer margin, probably the closest margin we've ever had here. In terms of WWE, the controversial comparisons that are made between WWE and AEW. So 810 to 258, still WWE by far ahead, by multiples still, but the margin getting closer. Compare that to last month in August, where AEW did almost the same, 256 to WWE's 933. That's a month with SummerSlam in there for WWE, so you can imagine why that might have been higher and September lower. Yeah, I mean, people can see what's on the screen here. New Japan is up in September, I guess maybe related to the G1 Climax. Far be it for me to analyze the goings-on of New Japan at this point. And is there anything unusual here in the order? I don't think so. Impact is number four, which it consistently has been across this timeline of 8 months. I'm always impressed by Stardom. Stardom surpassing Ring of Honor now. Stardom measuring at a 17. Ring of Honor measuring at a 10. And keep in mind, I just said 810 for WWE, just to give you an idea of how far ahead WWE is of these other players. But yeah, Stardom at 17, Ring of Honor at 10. Over this timeline, Stardom has surpassed Ring of Honor pretty decisively since June. Yeah, I think there's nothing too out of the norm there in the rest of the order. I will be doing a report on this for patrons with some better visualizations and whatnot.
So, quick question this. Because I'd be interested to see if maybe you do put it in there and it just doesn't even really register. But what Game Changer Wrestling would be doing recently?
Yeah.
With, you know, Moxley and Cardona and, you know, we had the Nick Gage Dark Side of the Ring and him on EW. And I wonder how Game Changer has been doing on Google Trends.
So one of the questions would be if does it even have a Google Trends profile? I mean, yeah. I can look up Game Changer Wrestling. I wouldn't want to do a query on GCW because that has probably tons of ambiguity. Yeah. Usually it's like if there's a Wikipedia page, there's probably a Google Trends profile. If I start typing Game Changer into Google Trends, there is a Game Changer Wrestling profile. If we compare it to, let's see here. And there, if I just pull this out to the entire timeline, which goes back to 2004. Oh, wow. They did a really high number in July. So if I compare this to the lowest, some like say one of the lower performers on this list, which is let's grab MLW. Let's say, yeah. One of the hard things to manage here is like, do I have everybody on here who should be on here? That's hard to manage.
I would think that would just be the one that I would think is missing, just because of how prominent they've been over the last year.
Yeah. So here, let me put my monitor on the screen so you can see what I'm looking at here. Let me crop this up. Here we go. So what the hell? All right. I have to put this down here so you can see it. All right. Here we go. Come on. Nope. Sorry.
And by the way, July was the that was the Nick Gage match, wasn't it? Against Jericho on AEW.
Probably. That sounds right.
I think the Cardona thing was the same month. Yes, that makes a lot of sense.
So we're looking at MLW and Game Changer. MLW is above Game Changer in every month. This is, we can see here, we're in July. That's what we were referring to there. Where Game Changer is at a 30, MLW is at a 38. But let's take one of the lower performers here on this list here. Let's go Big Japan. Big Japan Pro Wrestling, which I include in this. Let's put this in place of MLW. We put Big Japan Pro Wrestling in here. And what do we get? We do get Game Changer going above Big Japan in the last 3 months. So that's fair. I should probably be including Game Changer Pro Wrestling in here. Game Changer Wrestling in here. So it's above Big Japan. It's below MLW. Is it above CMLL? Let's see. If I just type in CMLL, we'll get a yes. Consejo Mundial de Lucha Libre. And, oh man, that is tough. Let's get the timeline smaller here. Let's look at the past 5 years only. CMLL is way up there in the mid-2000s, in the glory days of Mystico. So no, CMLL is above Game Changer this week before that, but there are some weeks where Game Changer has been above. But yeah, that's a good point, and that's something I will have to include. And I can include it in this report that I actually do publish for patrons. So there's that.
All right. We can move on to specific WWE trends as far as current talent.
Yes, we can. Let's do that. There we go. So this is,
I guess the word current is very vague.
So we'll do this one too, which will exclude all the, as I have arbitrarily categorized many of these, infrequent talents. Infrequent personalities. But in terms of I should probably get Bad Bunny out of here at this point. But number one, as always, is Dwayne Johnson. Number two, as usual. Now, Bad Bunny sometimes had Bad Bunny above him. But number two is John Cena. Number three is Bad Bunny. Number four is Roman Reigns. Slay. He's the needle mover. Undertaker, Triple H, Brock Lesnar. CM Punk, though, coming in at 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. CM Punk. Even after his huge peak with a measurement of 316 in August, he's down to 104, but still up there. Above Ronda Rousey, Dave Bautista, Ric Flair, Hulk Hogan, Big E, way up. Paige, Alexa Bliss, Randy Orton, Adam Cole, way up. I'm just going to run through this quickly, and then we'll talk about what the active list looks like. Adam Cole, Becky Lynch, Bryan Danielson. So Adam Cole above Bryan Danielson in September. How about that?
Yeah, that's interesting.
Virtually tied. Steve Austin, Kane, and Sasha Banks. Hear that, Twitter? Roman Reigns and Sasha Banks. But anyway. I have a chat open here. Let's close that. There we go. Okay. So number one among active wrestlers, who I call active. So I'm excluding John Cena, I guess, in this. Because he's no longer active. His guest appearance is now seemingly over with for now. Roman Reigns, number one, with a relative measurement in September of 179. The closest to him at 104, CM Punk. I'm pretty sure that's the highest an AEW person has ever ranked. CM Punk did rank above Roman Reigns in August. Big E, though, at number three, having won the title this month, or was definitely in September, at the end of September. Alexa Bliss at number four. I'm sure people are freaking out over the doll. The doll that Charlotte ripped up on the pay-per-view. Randy Orton, followed by Adam Cole and Bryan Danielson. Adam Cole at 54, Bryan Danielson at 53. So they're doing about half the Google web search volume of CM Punk even at this point. Followed by Bray Wyatt, the unaffiliated... Oh, I'm sorry. Jeez, I almost left out Sasha Banks, Slay. Sasha Banks is up there at 50. So below Bryan Danielson and Adam Cole in this month. Obviously, this is a peak month of interest for Bryan Danielson and Adam Cole. They will probably subside after this. But Sasha Banks follows them. And then the unaffiliated Bray Wyatt, is he debuting? Did he debut in Rochester? Has he taken over the Dark Order?
No.
Did it happen on AEW Dark? Are you sure?
I'm 100% positive.
The Fiend is not All Elite yet, anyway.
No.
Okay. Rey Mysterio, Finn Balor, Charlotte Flair, The Miz, Seth Rollins, Asuka, the unaffiliated Braun Strowman, Chris Jericho, Bobby Lashley, Jeff Hardy, John Moxley, Bianca Belair, and really on the rise here, Kenny Omega, who went from a 2, 3, 16, 14, 13, 14, 19, 24. Kenny Omega growing in a month where he had a big match with Bryan Danielson, for what it's worth.
All right. So we're going to go from one super internet entity of Google, and we're going to move over to YouTube, another super internet media entity. We have YouTube views and statistics on that to break down.
So this data is from Social Blade. If it wasn't clear that the Google data is from Google, it's from Google Trends. That is a Google app. Application? I don't know. Trends.google.com. Now, this is from socialblade.com. I'm a silver tier subscriber or something. Golo is a band. He's had it. Golo has had it. He's giving up on the program. He's storming away.
I'm using the laboratory.
I will talk about YouTube by myself now. So this is from socialblade.com. We here at the WrestleNomics headquarters have an enterprise subscription. Not really. We have a subscription to the silver tier that allows me to get daily granularity on YouTube viewing data. And what we found here is, of course, WWE leads by far by multiples. So in Q3, just under 3 billion YouTube views is my calculation. So I'm not just taking the actual number that Social Blade has, because there's a problem with this data from Social Blade, in that if you take a video off of your YouTube channel, that changes the all-time count of your YouTube views that is publicly visible in most cases, and is for all these that we're going to discuss. So if you take down a video that has, let's say, 1 million views on it, your total all-time view count goes down by 1 million. So if you take down a popular video that has more views than views you get on that day, you may end up measuring with a negative count of views for that day. So what I've tried to do is, there are a number of days for these companies' YouTube channels where I think Gull is having a conversation with a significant other right now. But anyway, so I'm going to mute him. So if you measure a negative view count for a day, what I've done is I've removed that from the data set. I've replaced that with either the average of the median of the surrounding days. I think it's the 14 days before and after, or maybe 5 days before, or something like that, to get an estimate of what's perhaps really happening here, right? So I think this is pretty reliable information now. So 3 billion video views on YouTube in Q3. That's down slightly from 3.25 billion. Chris Gull is back. He's back. I had to mute you, as I think you were having a conversation with your wife or something.
Oh, you could hear that far away?
A little bit. I don't know if you could discern what was being said, but you could hear that there was talking happening in the background.
I apologize for that.
No, we don't. That's awesome. We don't care. So 3 billion in Q3 for WWE, 3.25 billion in Q2, 3.7 billion in Q1. So Q3, I mean, this is a normal seasonality to WWE that I think is reflected in that, in terms of Q1 is the WrestleMania, or it's the build to WrestleMania quarter. Q2 is the WrestleMania quarter itself, but it's the only WrestleMania in the beginning. But anyway, you can see a monthly breakdown here too, if you're looking on video. AEW had its biggest quarter, I think, ever. 193 million. So to give you an idea of what the proportionality is for WWE versus AEW. 3 billion for WWE, under 200 million for AEW. So that's like, what is that? If we pull out the calculator here and we round and say 3 billion with all those zeros, divided by, let's say, 200 million, you know, that's 15 times the YouTube views. WWE does 15 times the YouTube views as AEW in all of Q3. Following AEW, the number three wrestling company in the world on YouTube is Beyond Wrestling, surpassing Impact Wrestling. Beyond Wrestling is actually down from what it had been doing in quarters prior. And I think in the year prior, it is down. In fact, if we look at this breakdown, we do have this across quarters here. If I look here, right?
They haven't been really active in the pandemic world as well as far as new content, which shows. I know they had to cancel their Americana show, but I believe they did have a show recently or show coming up. So.
Right. But there's intergender wrestling, though. Chris Gullo is evergreen on YouTube. You should know this. So Beyond is declining. I mean, in Q3 of 2020, they had 90 million views. They got 46 million views in this Q3. So that's fallen in half in Q3. Nonetheless, Impact Wrestling, 44 million views in Q3, down from 151 million views in Q3 of the prior year. So that's fallen in less than a third. I've heard that the YouTube strategy for Impact has changed. They have geo-blocked India. Clips are not going up as fast for the weekly TV show as perhaps they had in the past. So Impact changing its YouTube strategy. And even when we combine New Japan Japanese channel and the English channel, 17 million views in Q3. Below Impact, below Beyond Wrestling, neck and neck with Limitless is where New Japan is for YouTube views. Followed by Stardom with 15 million in the quarter. That is their highest quarter ever. 15 million up from 9.9 in Q2, up from 7.9 in the Q3 of the prior year. So just about doubling. I don't watch Stardom. I'm afraid to say I don't know that I've ever watched a Stardom event. Maybe I've never even watched a Stardom match, but I'm fascinated by this growth that Stardom is having, or this momentum in some metrics that we see, including web search, including these YouTube views, right? This is YouTube generates some revenue, not a ton, but some. This is not ticket sales. This is not media deals, but it's interesting to see. I think AEW and Stardom are the only brands that really have a lot of positive momentum right now.
Do you think it has anything to do with Bushiroad acquiring the company not so long ago and kind of putting, you know, a lot of stuff behind it? We even saw the integration of Stardom matches on New Japan cards.
That doesn't hurt. What's interesting, do I have a Stardom thing here? I do. If you look at this graph right here, can you see the skull? This chart?
Yeah, I got it here too. Yeah.
See these dots that fly above the average trend line. This is May 2020, around the time that Hanakamura dies, which coincided with this big jump in YouTube views, as I'm sure people were checking out maybe Hanakamura videos or something like that. But even after that, you know, things calmed back down, but there have been some not as big spikes, but some other, you know, increases in YouTube views, including, you know, as recently as the 26th of September. Where they did in one day 650,000 YouTube views. I don't know why. Somebody who's more familiar with Stardom might have a guess. But there's that. I mean, I should say in fairness that WWE, relative to its pandemic year, is doing well too in terms of a lot of categories, I think. TV ratings for one. But yeah. I think that's the story. I noticed that MLW appeared to have taken off a lot of its videos in, I think, August. And then in September, those views appeared to be replaced. But MLW appears to be way up, having its biggest quarter ever, 7.6 million video views, if I'm adjusting and calculating that correctly, which would be by far its biggest quarter ever. Unless there's something before 2019 that I'm not aware of. So there's that. I mean, we see NWA coming back to life here in Q3 as they've been doing more events, right? That makes sense. Nothing else really jumps out here, but yeah. If we look at, we can look at what were the WWE daily trends. There's a few things that jump off. Do you have any idea on August 20th, 2020, why WWE might have done 225 million views in one day, which I think is probably its biggest ever? August 20th, this is SummerSlam time, I don't know why. Maybe the return of Roman Reigns. Roman Reigns, a needle mover.
No, wasn't that? And I could be wrong. Was that the day CM Punk came to
WWE? No, 2020, last year.
Oh, 2020, my bad. August 2020. I don't know.
That's SummerSlam time, so that might be it. But we do have, so if we look at AEW, August 21st, 2021, which you had in mind there, that is the day following CM Punk's return on Rampage. AEW did its biggest day ever on YouTube at 8.5 million views in one day across its entire channel. And then we have on the 26th for some reason. So remember, All In was on the 5th, but on the 26th of September, 6 million views. I'm not sure why. Maybe that's the Grand Slam episode.
It was the Friday Night SmackDown before SummerSlam was August 20th.
So okay. No idea.
Not sure what that would have done, yeah.
Okay. And there's Impact. You can see the decline there since the middle of 2020, I guess, where they were doing well in 2020, but then have been on the decline pretty consistently since July 2020 or so. So, yeah. I think that's it for YouTube. Anything else?
All right. No, the that's it. It looks to be, you already brought it up. I'm interested to see how MLW Fightland does.
Yes.
With the Hammerstone versus Jacob Fatu match that will be airing right after Dark Side of the Ring. I don't know what this week's Dark Side is. I didn't watch the preview for it yet. Mm-hmm. The craziness that's been my week. So I'm not sure what the lead-in with that would be. But
I was half paying attention. I think it's going to be Dark Side.
Well, no, I'm saying like which...
which episode?
Which, yes, yeah. Is it a very common interest thing? Is it XPW? Is it Luna Vachon? Or is it... I think they're ending with the steroid trial, which I see that one doing probably best, at least in the second half.
So October 7th, Bikers, Bombs, and Bedlam. Johnny Canine.
Oh, yeah, okay, yep.
Johnny Canine.
Bruiser Bedlam, yep.
Yes, so that's what it's going to be. And then the week after that, according to Wikipedia, is the Luna Vachon episode. And then on the 21st, I expect you as a talking head on this episode. Extreme and Obscene, Rob Black's XPW.
I unfortunately won't be a talking head on an episode, but there will be a lot of rediscovering the indie resharing of our podcast that week.
Yeah, you should definitely push that. Can't get enough XPW? Well, check this out.
Yeah, we got 8 hours of it.
Yes. Okay. Plugs?
Yeah, so Chris Gello on Instagram, Facebook, and Twitter. If you're in the Buffalo area, I'll be doing comedy this Friday night at Classic Lanes, a bowling alley. So come see me and a bunch of really funny comics. Last show I did there was absolutely awesome. And then on Sunday, I will actually be in Buffalo for wrestling for ESW Riverworks, which actually be streamed live on IWTV.
Oh, really?
That is a 3 p.m. Start with Davey Richards versus Daniel Garcia in the main event. So that should be a pretty huge show. Other than that, you can catch my other podcast, RTI Pod. We just came out with NWA Episode 2, breaking down the business and the title from 2007 to 2017. We talk about that 7 levels of hate matches that Adam Pearce and Colt Cabana had. We talked about Bruce Tharp taking over. Some very interesting tidbits on the guy that Trubich wanted to take over the NWA who, most recently was in the news for owning a strip club and there was like drugs and everything and scandal and there was just some very interesting tidbits that we discovered while we were doing the episode, including something involving a stripper named Yummy. Like that was how they quoted her in the newspaper. So the things you find when you break down independent wrestling history.
Yes.
We broke down that and so much more, and we'll have part 3 coming out in October. So.
Okay.
And it's RTI Pod and Rediscovering Indies Instagram and Facebook.
I'm going to wrestle on that. I heard I'm wrestling on that Sunday show for ESW as well. Streamed live on IWTV. I don't know who I'm wrestling or what I'm doing. I've asked and I've been told there. I think I'm an alternate right now in case. I'm going to wrestle, but you know, who knows what I might need to be plugged in somewhere or something like that. I was told. I'm doing every Thursday a live TV ratings talk on YouTube with all the visualizations and so forth and things of that nature every Thursday at 5:30 PM Eastern. If you don't know already, that's just after the Dynamite number comes out and people lose their minds. That's free for everybody. If you prefer the audio version, that's out there for patrons too. You can subscribe to Patreon, patreon.com/WrestleNomics. For $5 a month, you get the TV ratings reports that I put out nearly every weekday. You get access to the big WrestleNomics spreadsheet. You get access to other reports. I'll be doing a Google Trends report that we discussed, coming up soon. I need to tell everyone about the NPS study that I usually do every quarter. I'm having a problem with my... So I use Facebook ads to generate those responses so that I'm not using my organic social media and just getting an echo chamber. And I'm having it... So I think my Facebook ad account was hacked. I've got a lot of unusual names, apparently from countries that I don't live in, who have taken over my ad account. I had over $1,000 charged to my credit card in Facebook ads. I had to call my credit card company and get those charges reversed. So I'm trying to work with Facebook, which you can imagine is a opaque experience, trying to get them to recover my ad account so I can place an ad and I can do another NPS study, that is Net Promoter Score study, to test the sentiment of various wrestling programs. So hopefully I'll be getting to that soon. You can subscribe to patreon.com for all the latest TV ratings and business and wrestling business news that smart readers and listeners, as well as some of the major wrestling executives for major wrestling companies, rely on to help them understand the wrestling business. You can follow me on Twitter at WrestleNomics and at Brandon Thurston. I'm Brandon Thurston.
I'm Chris Gullo.
He's Chris Gullo. And we'll talk to everyone next time.